We are live.
Here we are. It's us and it's Noised. I don't know why I asked this so late just today. Is it friends with a faulty internet connection or questionable companionship developed over the web?
Oh, I get it. Because bad internet or bad friends. Yeah. Well, I think statistically this has actually been the former, because we've had like our share of internet issues and outages and power going down.
Yeah, when it's not one, it is the other. So
yes, you should absolutely not trust anything we say. But you also may not hear what the bad advice because our internet went.
Mm-hmm. I did upgrade my switches though, so I think we're gonna be good for on my end at least.
Little worried because we're getting the snowstorm down here, but
we
haven't been out of power or anything.
The east looks like a nightmare.
It is really bad some places. We actually do have a state of emergency here in Indiana, but at least where we're at, we haven't seen too much. But you definitely don't want to go very far. They don't really. It's a little different in states where they are used to hard winters, because then you have all the stuff like on hand and stuff. But some places that don't deal with it very often, they just get fucking terrorized. Yeah.
Do you get freezing rain?
We do, but not often and not currently. There's a little worry because it's going to be fluctuating real bad. So if it starts melting and then freezing.
Yeah.
But actual freezing rain is pretty rare here.
It is the scariest to me because we don't have that. We don't have freezing rain. Like sometimes it gets wet and then it freezes, but it's not like sometimes you see like in Montreal where you have to send in the army to help because everything is just like coated in ice.
Yeah. The only thing
the power lines are falling.
anything with tracks.
Yeah.
I will have to know, by the way, I am 1% more Canadian today. I'm drinking clearly Canadian.
Well, clearly you're moving in the right direction.
Yeah.
Now?
1% more. It is, in fact, a product of Canada. I don't know if you actually have it there. Maybe you don't.
Yeah,
maybe
we have clearly Canadian.
Oh, okay. So, I was looking for something. Actually, I was buying like just sparkling water, which usually is just sold without sweeteners.
Mm-hmm.
So I got these on accident because I thought they were just the same thing. Then I realized it's actually just a soda, but it's like actual sugar and they don't have any like color or anything. It's,
they used to be really popular in the 90s when they came out.
Oh, okay. So it's like old school. So I'm
or they had a resurgence. I'm not sure.
So I'm
They were gone for a while and then they came back.
Vintage Canadian, then. That's cool.
Yeah. But they came in like glass bottles with like fat bottoms and they're like, you felt fancy drinking them.
Oh, I've seen, because I was looking them up to figure out what it really was, and it was like a big thing. And I saw the glass bottles. They must be like, here they're only sold in cans. Nobody really sells stuff in glass bottles anymore. But they are recommended. If anyone who's watching, if you want to be Canadian, this is a good way to go. It makes it very palatable.
It's better than beer. Stay hydrated.
I drank so every time they do these seasonal flavors or whatever of Mountain Dew, and I always buy one. They're always terrible, like without exception. There's garbage. And I got one, and it was like some berry thing. It was extremely purple, and I was kind of choking my way through it. And then I looked on the bottle, and it said it was like, I think 160% of your daily like sugar.
Ooh.
Or no, it was 160% of your daily carbs, and it was all like from sugar. So it was pretty intense. I was like, I have a giant sweet tooth, and I was having difficulty like finishing it. It was pretty bad. I don't even know. Maybe a regular Mountain Dew is just as bad.
I think it's. I don't know. Actually, I don't drink it, so I have. We're gonna say hello to Robert Dean. How's it going? Hey, haven't Robert. Missed much. It is true. We've talked about the weather and clearly Canadian. I think that's it. And Lance.
Yes, Lancelot is joining us today. He has been like attached to my desk all week. Every time I try to type or use my mouse, he bites me or pokes his nose at me or sticks his paws on me.
That's adorable. I'm going to introduce us. This is Bad Internet Friends Podcast, episode 30. This is the Venusian Hammer episode, where we talk about the Venusian Hammers and clearly Canadians, the weather, and Lancelot.
Yes, and... I actually wanted to start off. I finally remembered I mentioned to you before the show last night, I think, there was something I wanted to talk about, and I forgot what it was.
I was
watching a video with this guy. I think the channel is called just Miniatures Adventures. It has one of those generic names. The guy goes by Big Lee. Nice guy, good guy, I think. But he has this video where he was talking about, house rules and games. And if you can, it was sort of wide meandering of, you know, like, if you could like house rule too much, or if there's like an issue, if you're like house ruling game you don't understand, or if you should just like change it right away, or because, you know, it's your game.
Yeah, yeah.
Which I thought was kind of interesting, because it's like, because I realized, I don't think about this all that much, but if I'm playing a game that I've like bought, you know, or downloaded or something, I almost never house rule it, because I want to try playing it like the way that, one, I want to try playing it the way that the dude like intended it, but also, like, if I start house ruling it, then it starts feeling an awful lot like, okay, well, if you change like one thing, then I can just change like 12 more things, and then, it's, then it's just like doing work. So I don't want to do that. But I also like the challenge sometimes. It's funny because I do think, like, obviously you should be free to like change anything you want. But I do like the challenge of like trying to do it right sometimes. Like, it can be fun to like, and sometimes like you'll realize something in a game is like not clear, but when you play it, you'll realize, oh, okay, these two things working like this means that, you know, it has some sort of cool effect that you might not know.
It's true. You should always give it a chance. You know, play rules as written, and then work your way from there.
Yeah, or as intended, if you can't figure it out from, like, I was reading one game last night, and I legitimately don't understand how combat works. The text is no help at all. And it's like 1,000 years old. It was like an old internet thing.
So you
can't, like, ask. That, like, the guy's email is, like, some, like, university address that he probably hasn't been to for 10 years. So sometimes you have to, especially with like more indie stuff. But yeah, it was just interesting because, like, you know, I don't think anyone thinks that you shouldn't house rule a game, you know, like, unless you're playing a tournament or that's your main thing. I remember,
if you want to send me a link to the guy's video after, we can toss it up in the
His description. Really good. He mostly does historical stuff, but he kind of just picks like random topics to like talk about. And
Well, if it's worth thinking about, then you might as well.
Yeah,
shout out.
Throw it in there. So
yeah, maybe we'll have him on someday. Who knows?
Oh yeah, that would be good. We do occasionally dabble in the historical elements of a hobby, but it's also, I think there's some people who like, and maybe it just depends on the kind of gamer you are, because there's some people who are like, you buy a game and you're, your goal is to just, like, you want to build an army for it, and you want to play it, or, you know, hopefully. But I think there's also some people who buy a game, like, kind of with the intention that this game is just, like, a starting point, and we're going to change a bunch of stuff or add some things, or, like, maybe that's, like, a English, like, club thing. Oh, I think Robert.
Yeah, he's...
got the link.
Oh, nice, nice.
So, but yeah,
link,
I think...
the chat. I don't know if he can link, because he's not a mod.
Oh, maybe it... maybe the internet censor bot.
Yeah, most likely.
Will.
So. Yeah, unless you're a moderator, usually you can't post links.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I'd probably just notice. That's all right. We'll throw it in the comments afterwards. He knows exactly who it is I'm talking about.
Nice.
But yeah, I think some people, you know, there's some games I bought where I maybe wasn't really that minded to actually play it. I just kind of want to, like, look at it and read it and maybe look for some ideas to see how they do things. Those are stuff I use to get in PDFs for sure, because I don't want to have my shelves cluttering up. But I guess the, like, question to come out of it is, if a game is, like, so broken out of the book that you either, you can't really play it because it's just broken, or, like, whatever way it's written, you're just too dumb to figure it out. Like,
yeah,
you tried, you've read it multiple times. It just doesn't make any goddamn sense. Is it worth, like, trying to, like, fix that on your own? Like, you know, you end up with, like, 4 pages of, like, different versions to make it work, or like, nowadays there's like 3,000 games out there, like, are you gonna stick out that amount of time and work, you know?
Yeah, seems like you should just move on.
I mean, I definitely, like, inclined to. I think, like, back in the day when money was tight and it was hard to get games, then it was different, but nowadays if a game is, like, incomprehensible, I'll admit I don't have that much motivation to, like, slug it out, unless I'm... The exception would be if there's a game that, like, literally nobody else does the same thing, but I don't know if that's, like, what is even is that nowadays? Nobody does that. So, yeah, so I don't know. Like, maybe people do just kind of move on. Like, you have infinite choices. Or, like, people fall back on, like, what you usually play. Like, oh, this game sucks, let's just play Warhammer.
I remember once a long time ago, someone posted some rules on Facebook. And I went to the War Game Fault site, and it was like a free rule set or something, and I downloaded it and I read it. I'm like, this doesn't quite make sense, but if you just tweak like these little areas, I think it would add up. So like I emailed the author, and they're like, oh yeah. And they fixed the typo, but they left everything kind of incomprehensible. I'm like, okay, well, I guess that's it.
Sometimes your house rule might turn out to be like, that's what it was supposed to have said all along.
Yeah.
Like sometimes because I've had that a couple of times where I've emailed somebody to ask them, and like you can tell from the conversation with them how the game is supposed to work, but that's just not what the book says.
Yeah.
Like something happened in between, you know, so it's hard to express yourself in written format. But yeah, so it's, I guess it also depends on, oh, do you want to blow up Robert's comment there?
There it is. Every time you say that, it doesn't show up for me. And then like right after you finish talking, we see it.
There's like a lag between, because it takes like a second for the chat versus. And then
you're on YouTube actual. Yeah, not in through the.
Oh, yeah. I see.
It's not generally worth rewriting a game with significant house rules. Being a miniature agnostic, my usual goal is acquiring rules is to play with someone, with some of my existing toys. Yeah.
Yeah. So that's kind of the vibe, right? Like, if you are gonna have to put in that much work versus something else that is probably, like, if we're being honest, a lot of games are interchangeable enough that if they don't have some like real big selling point that is unique to them, slugging it out for like that amount of work, like if you're just looking for some generic like Napoleonic like rank and flank, there are some choices for you. Like you don't have to, you don't have to grind it out for and maybe there's not. Now, if it's like your best friend's game, then maybe you want to put in a little more effort. But in that case, you know,
you should. Yeah, sometimes you got a vested interest in it. And it makes it worthwhile. Yeah. But...
Or maybe it does have like one cool thing, like this game like blew your mind about something and you just really want like, shooting to actually work.
Yeah, if only we could roll the dice. I just want to be able to roll the dice, but I don't know which ones.
Yeah.
Or what happens when I do.
Yeah.
If it's too much work, there are plenty of other fish in the sea, says Robert. Or I'll just have to bite the bullet and write some home rules. Yep.
Yeah. Absolutely. Well, and that's, you know, maybe okay, this game kind of sucks, but the way it does, like, morale is pretty cool, so I'll just borrow that.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if you play games for, like, any length of time, like, if you just want to sit down and play, like, a simple, like, move, shoot, morale check thing, like, anyone can bash that together on a piece of paper.
Yeah.
In, like, half an hour. You played enough games. You know, like,
and there's some versatile like generic rule sets out there, you know, that you can just tag extra rules onto and you'll be good to go.
Well, and that's the other thing, if you're gonna put in that amount of work, maybe there's a different game you could also put in that work, but now like it's on top of, so yeah, like exactly. Instead of fixing like how that shooting is broken, you could just like go to your favorite generic rules and just add some rules so that your aliens work or whatever, like just spend it on something that like has a little more payoff. So yeah, but house ruling, I guess, sort of segues very neatly into the hammer. Yes, it actually, I guess it could be a double hammer, because I'm also working on the rogue hammer patrol rules, but that's like not a build yet.
That's the next stream.
Yeah, it might be. Try to split them out so it's not just me yammer.
Hey, it's just hammer year. It's the year of hammer.
This is true. So Venusian Hammer then is out in an early version, fully playable, but I try to change things like each time. So for this one, I wanted to like get it in front of people like early, so people could like look at it in a pretty minimalist form. So there's, you know, an army list and stuff, but it doesn't have like as many units as I think the full version should have. It doesn't really have like scenario shit and stuff like that. So people get a chance to like get stuck in and get involved with it earlier rather than later. But then because nobody has armies that are usable, there's like lag where nobody has posted playing a game yet.
Yeah.
Because everyone is like figuring out. But it is Squad Hammer powered Victorian science fiction. I think we talked about this a while ago, but
yeah,
it's like this, the distinction between Victorian science fiction and steampunk, because they overlap a lot, and a lot of the stuff is, you know, kind of a sliding scale. But some random dude on a blog said, I don't have any reason to suspect that he isn't right about everything, because, you know, he wrote a blog and had a picture, said that Victorian science fiction is science fiction that still is set in a Victorian mindset. And steampunk is basically like a modern day setting with like Victorian like flair to it, which I don't know if that's true, but it makes sense to me.
True. So, yeah.
And what I wanted for this was that it would feel like, you know, Victorian armies with bright uniforms, rifles and stuff like that, slugging it out, mm-hmm. along with a bunch of like sci-fi stuff. So they have walkers and there's dinosaurs. Because, you know, as all scientists have confirmed, there are dinosaurs on Venus. So that's just a thing.
Yes. It's very warm. So,
yeah, you know, it's a jungly environment. They like that. You know, the air is mm-hmm. kind of thick and dense, so, which probably doesn't do wonders for your black powder rifle, but it's great for growing giant life forms.
Yeah, yeah. Megafauna.
Uh-huh. Yeah, everyone likes megafauna. Mm-hmm. So the idea is, well, it's basically that. It is a player versus player game. I wanted to just do something that was like that. And I guess for whatever reason, Hammer has not been heavily solo. People play it solo, obviously. Mm-hmm. But I think maybe it's just because people who are invested, if you're already on board with the idea of a game, you're already kind of on board with like making a little bit of stuff yourself and figuring stuff out. Mm-hmm. So I think people just kind of play the way they damn well want. but it does feature some changes from regular Squad Hammer because, you know, it has to feat. So instead of, at this point, I think we've done like every possible version of activations. Because originally it's been like a dice roll. And then I think at some point it was like two dice, pick the highest.
Yeah.
And then for Rogue Hammer, it was a set number of activations, you know, full and partial. This is like the next version of that.
Oh.
Which is you get six actions. Jason is holding me to truth to power there, saying Chrome Hammer. Chrome Hammer is absolutely so. We'll see how quickly I forget about people who are doing amazing work. I'm a lousy fucking dude.
Endless Hammer, of course, solo.
Yes, there will be. That's like the the cousin that shows up. Like she only shows up at like holidays, but always brings like the cool pie nobody's seen before.
Yeah, that's right. You would never have believed sour cream would go together with raisins. That
yeah, but here you are, and you didn't even know that was a thing you could do.
Yeah.
So this time it's six actions, and you could take six units and activate, give them each one action. You could take three units, give them two, or whatever you want.
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of a different. Mostly just because I wanted to try it as a different thing, but I like the idea that you could have a little more choice with it. You can, if you need to move like your whole like line of rifle guys forward, you can give them all like six guys and they all take a move action. So you get advancing up. There are multiple unit types and they're kind of like more classes now. So you have infantry, which does the infantry stuff. They slug it out. They can return fire when fired upon. They have decent like close combat value. You have characters who are not quite complete. The characters right now mostly they have leadership, but I do want to add some that has some more like fun abilities and stuff like adventurers and things like that. There are heavy weapons, so you can have a cannon, you can have like an early like hand crank like machine gun or like a multi-barrel guns. Because there's a bunch of models out of that you can find. You can also build your own.
Yeah.
You have fighting machines, which are walkers. Of course, there are no. They don't have tanks in the Victorian era. They obviously did have walking fighting machines.
Bicycles, right?
Yeah.
And you fire things.
Yep. so they're all loaded up. They have cannon and machine guns, quote. They have a damage table and stuff, so they can kind of act as your like centerpiece of the battle, trundling along. And, you know, that's an option if you run into some megafauna, which
you will.
So dinosaurs are part of your army. Newest Act, I think it was Newest to Act, asked the perfectly obvious question that I never clarified. If the dinosaurs are supposed to have, like, riders on them or not. And I think that's just, like, up to you. If you want to put a couple of guys up there on a T-Rex, that would look pretty good.
Yeah. Dinosaurs riding humans.
That is a good modeling project, but it might be a little difficult. There's also giant bugs, because I just thought that was cool. And it is so easy to find, like, cool, like, rubber and plastic, like, bug toys and stuff. Like, a lot of those would be perfect in, like, a 20mm game or whatever. So there's a couple of versions of these. They can obviously take, like, insane amounts of fire, but they're mostly used for fighting things in close combat. There's a spitting bug. And then I added balloons. So you can... and those, basically, you have to, like, model something up or convert something. But they're basically, like, a hot air balloon with like a couple of riflemen or dudes throwing bombs in the basket, and you can
so they you get extra points for using real balloons, right?
I feel like that's although you have to be careful if you're using a metal miniature, because those little bayonets get pretty pointy.
That's right.
So balloons can engage each other in hand-to-hand combat. You can even like board other balloons and capture them. Ooh. And then you have, you know, so it's like an interceptor balloon that is specifically designed for that. You have a sharpshooter, because I'm sure a air balloon basket is a very stable firing platform.
Oh, yes. Yes, absolutely.
And you have like general tactical balloons. So some units are better suited for shooting at balloons than others. So you get kind of this very like motley looking army. There's one overall army list everyone picks from. Later, I think there will be some options to like customize. So you can have like, if you want your Russians to be more stalwart and stoic or whatever, you want your troops to be more offensive minded and close combat oriented. But for right now, just to get things started, everyone just picks from the same list. So you can choose whatever you want it to look like. If you want to bring like American Civil War, like Union infantry in their greatcoats, and you want to bring like some British like redcoats from the Sudan, with a walker from the Sudan. You know, like everyone can pick the models they kind of like. If you prefer, the rules don't distinguish between rifles versus muskets, it's just guns. But if you want to use, you know, like there's lots of Napoleonic minis if you want to like a little more of that look. You know, it would look pretty good. Get like Prussian, like Landwehr guys or something. It would look good. So it's kind of like whatever you want to get out of it. This is really like intended for people who are looking at, who like coming up with and picking models for an army and like putting together like something cool, interesting. Because you're going to have to like mix and match stuff. So you might go, you know, get some boxes of like Perry, like plastic minis for your infantry and a couple officers. And then you, you know, go to the toy store and get yourself a giant beetle or something. Then you, you can probably find a walker that, like sci-fi walker that you could modify a little bit to look more steamy.
I have a like a really old metal Imperial Sentinel.
Yeah, it definitely
looks very steampunk. It's not the first one; I think it's the second one, and it's very very steampunky looking. And it's got like a Gatling gun in the front.
Oh yeah. There's like the original like egg ones too, which are pretty cute. But they're like impossible to find. Yeah, that one was like really short lived because then like very short.
Yeah, I don't know why. Yeah.
Well, they did a plastic kit for a third edition. And I think that just like killed it. Nobody bought the metal because
it was
kind of spindly and hard to assemble because it's like a huge box cockpit on like little legs.
Yeah. Oddly enough, it actually fits together really nicely. It's one of the better GW metal giant kits.
Yeah.
Some of them are awful.
Yeah. I mean, I guess you could just like find an AT-ST model and turn that into something like, and that's kind of the point of it, because so much of this either doesn't have any ready option you can just go buy, so you'd have to do a little work for it. And that's kind of, I think the kind of person who's into this is probably the kind of person who like enjoys that kind of thing. You know, they enjoy looking at like a bunch of like plastic dinosaurs at the toy store and figuring out which one look good next to like a 15 millimeter like line of riflemen. So that's kind of the vibe. Do something that's a little fun. Do something that's different. We always like to do things in a different way. And this hopefully means at least like a 2-year moratorium before anyone asks for steampunk stuff ever again. So
yeah,
it's like,
and of course, I was going to say, anyone who wants to check this out, I did put the link in the description, and it has the Hobby Homies affiliates tag on there. You can feel free to erase that and add your own tag to anyone else you want, or you can support the homies because they're cool.
Yeah, you can always use a little. So it's kind of a weird thing. It's one of those things that is like kind of destined to be like a little niche thing that occasionally people bring up because it's just, it's not a popular genre. Again, because you have to build stuff for it. You can't just, I mean, in theory, if you have some like, if you have like a Franco-Prussian war army, and you have some infantry and some cannon, and you don't really, like, you don't have to bring a walker, and you don't have to bring a dinosaur. You can just bring your army as it is to get started. That was the other part. You, if you play historicals, odds are you will have something sitting around that will do. If you're not that fussed, I mean, pick some, like, World War One, like, Russians or something. If that's what you got, that gets you started. Like, they're just models. And then you can like swap something out, maybe buy some like more Victorian looking figures, or then you find yourself like build a balloon or something. So you can kind of ease into it. Like odds are you'll have something usable.
And if you want something racy, I think the Reaper Bones has kind of like a version of the John Carter Martian kind of people.
Yeah. There are a couple of alien like mercenary units. I wanted to very specifically, because I feel like colonial gaming is like its own genre, and there are very different things and expectations those rules kind of. So I didn't want to do like Victorian or sci-fi colonial. Like I wanted it to be a firmly feeling on like the Victorian sci-fi part, which to me is like ranks of troops. And then the sci-fi part is like tech and kit and stuff. So I wanted to like be nailed down on that. So the aliens, there are no like native aliens on Venus. They're all like mercenaries, but they're kind of the avenue to different units. We are planning on doing up a little background. My wife was asking me when she was like reading up on it. It was like, okay, so how do people without jet engines get to Venus? And I was like, well, that's a great question. You can help answer. So that'll be so there will be some background that will be added, but it'll be the sort of like where you can come up with your own stuff, or you can decide if the background like makes sense to you. Like in the end, it's all like, you know, silliness.
Yeah.
So Witted pops up if you want to pop up Dean's comment.
My club was responsible for Gaslight. Back in the aughts, we used to have all manner of 19th century troops, dinosaurs, and steamwalkers.
Yeah, you are locked and loaded in advance. And yeah, there has been Gaslight is probably the biggest example, I think. There's been like one or two little things out there. I feel like this genre has always been either like a club game that like a club gets together, like he says, and everyone like contributes and builds. Or it's been something where, like, somebody has tried to turn it into, like, a glossy rulebook thing. And then, like, it doesn't go anywhere because there's just not enough people who are interested in it.
And nowadays, you can make it into a social media movement, like Turnip or Sludge Trench Crusade, all those
Turnip
things.
Turnip kind of, like, I didn't follow Sludge very much, but Turnip was, like, very grassroots in that it was just some dudes. Like, the guy, like, came up with his look and his thing. And for a while, like, I remember people were making the models when there wasn't a game at all. I don't even know if people play the game. Like, the people who were building stuff for it. Because a lot of them started before there was a rule book at all. So that was, like, entirely. It's like the Inquisitor 28 stuff, where it's, like, very, like, grassroots. Mm-hmm. Like, that obviously originated in a corporate game, because it's Inquisitor. But nobody, I don't think those dudes play games either. They just like build and model.
It's true.
Like when I've looked at forums and stuff, it seems like they like all get together like a convention somewhere once a year and they play a game.
Oh yeah. So that's all we got time for. They're busy hobbying.
Yeah, I mean, some of those conversions look like they take a lot of work. They're good at painting, so that's a whole different. But yeah, like a lot of that stuff is very like grass. So I don't know that this will necessarily be that grassroots. It'll be, you know, a little niche thing that mostly like the hardcore like Nordic Weasel fans are into, but you know, it's cool to like contribute to that a little bit. Not everything has to be like a big glossy book.
You never know, it explodes after all. Just every once in a while something just gains traction for no apparent reason.
Yeah, it's unpredictable. I ran into this weekend. I was very thrilled with it because I posted a picture of Ludwig, our cat, who was sleeping. And for some reason, it just exploded. Like, I think it got something like 800 likes and like 30 people reposting it. And it was just a picture of like Ludwig.
Yeah, exactly.
But I realized what happened was that after the first like 5 likes, which are all people I knew, there was like an account that just goes around the internet and finds like cute dog and cat photos and reposts them. And it has like a trillion people following it.
Yeah.
So when that happened, everyone saw it, and then they all did it. So, like, for a moment, Ludwig was internet famous. But yeah, it was like, that one account was, like, what set it all off. So, and sometimes with games, it's the same thing. Like, Turnip might literally have been the same thing, you know? Like, it picks up Steam and, like, Twitter or whatever. Or Twitter at the time. Like, now it's a little more creepy on there.
Yeah.
But yeah, like all it takes are like one YouTube. Like I know that when 5 parsecs was like first, like the glossy book was always going to be a success, but it definitely didn't hurt that you got, you know, me, myself, and Die, and some mm-hmm. of those like big gaming YouTubers that covered it. Yeah, homies have been a huge like element as well. But
yeah, absolutely.
You know,
I'm going to touch back on Noise's comment from a little while ago. He said, doesn't feel annoyed or ignored. He said, what you said, rather than house ruling existing stuff, bolt on new mechanics from other games. That I do with moderation, as I'm a casual with a capital C. A filthy casual with a capital F and a capital C.
Yes. the grim truth about anything in the world is that it would not exist if it wasn't for the casual fans. Because 100 dudes showing up because it's cool pays 100 tickets or buys 100 books. Mm-hmm. Three hardcore fans buy 3 books, so 3 tickets. So that's just the nature of it. But it's true, though. A lot of times, especially with a lot of games that are kind of like modular, like, yes, it's a beautiful, unified thing that was carefully thought out over extensive playtest sessions. But in reality, if you swap out the close combat rules, like, it probably works. So, sometimes you can just bring something in and like hack it up a little bit. I always wanted to try as like an experiment. So you got to have like movement, shooting, close combat, and morale, right? That's like the four. Mm-hmm. So you pick like 4 different games to take each of those things from and see if you can like make it make it all work.
The mashup.
Yeah. I've like paid for games that felt like that. Like one of those games, like they're often like old English games where nothing like works the same. So close combat is like 2 average dice added together, and shooting is a d20 roll under, and morale check is like a card system or something. Like nothing makes sense, but it basically works as long as you don't like stop and try to like think about it.
Yeah. Now we're on to the card phase.
Yeah. I think what was it? Brother Against Brother? It was just like a Civil War skirmish game. It had like a card system from around. It was cool, but it was the only thing in the game that was cards. Everything else was just like rolling dice. So yeah, you sometimes get like, I mean, it meant they could sell a card deck. So, you know, you needed it to play. But yeah, sometimes you can just spawn apart entirely. And I'll admit, like a lot of times it was like how does difficult terrain work in this one? Like, I don't know. It's probably half move. You know,
yeah, whatever,
yeah, or you just kind of figure it out. Like, can you choose, like, off the top of your head for any random game, like, how does like choosing a target work? Can you shoot at anybody? I don't know, probably. Maybe you need to shoot the
closest,
yeah. Like, well, maybe it's like
biggest,
right?
Biggest or closest, probably.
That's
usually.
If you go with that, it will probably work okay, but that may not be what the rule book says, you know. Like, I was wondering when you put in, like, oh, you have to choose the 2 closest target. Like, do people actually do that, or do they just, like, skip that line?
Yeah.
Like, you get to shooting, and you just immediately jump down to where the hit table is, and then...
Yeah.
Oh, we got Psychic Hazard in the chat.
Nice. Wait for it to pop up here. There we are.
Yeah. Hey, Psychic. Or Hazard. Hey, folks. Is it Mr. Hazard?
Mr. Hazard to you.
Yeah. You know,
charge like in the usual way. Where did that come from again? It's a classic line.
Yes, it is. I forget what it was. I had originally said it was Jason, but I think Jason said it wasn't him. So I forget which friend it was who had written to a game designer, because they had bought a game and it did not explain how charging into close combat worked. And the email response they got said that you just charge in the usual way.
Mm-hmm.
And then it became like an institution, because it's so like true. A lot of gaming just relies on, like, of course you know how charging works. You move your dude towards the other guy.
Yep.
But, you know.
Nothing special about it.
Yeah. But, you know, sometimes that's not. So, yeah, it just became, like, shorthand. Like, a game doesn't really explain things, or just, like, do it the way that probably, like, seems to make sense. Like, can you shoot at the guy all the way over there? I don't know. We choose targets in the usual way.
Yep. Hey, got a question for you. Back to weather. How does where you grew up in Denmark compare to where you're living now? Like, what's the weather kind of variance?
We get a little, it's hard to tell, because I was told moving to Indiana that there was, the winters are very mild and we never get snow. That is a load of fucking bullshit. So Denmark is very like wet, coastal temperate. So it's cold and rainy 380 days of the year. And the rest of them, we do get like, I don't know, a couple of weeks of snow, maybe a month of snow. But it's not real heavy or anything. Michigan is definitely like way more brutal. If we have, I don't think we have anything in, one in the chat who knows what Pacific Northwest weather is. But if you've been to like Seattle or Portland, or from what I understand, Vancouver, BC, like that weather is basically like Danish weather. It's fairly gray and it rains all the time. So yeah. What was irritating me about this shit is that it is insanely cold. It is currently minus 13 Celsius with the sun out all day. But most of the time, it is super cold. It is super windy. There's no terrain or cover. And there is usually no snow at all. Like, we have snow right now, which is nice. But, like, having the wind just, like, grind through. And there's no, like, tree lines to cover it because it's just flat farmland. Without having snow on the ground, so it looks like winter, that just like demoralizes you.
Yeah, it just looks like the apocalypse.
Yeah, it just like feels awful. Like they forgot to like turn the heat on. Like the sun went out, and we did. It's that they always say it takes 8 minutes from the sun going out to we all freeze to death.
Oh yeah, yeah.
You know, so are we like,
almost there?
Yeah. Like in a minute, it's just gonna be fucking flash frozen.
Let's see what his psychic has got to say. Was very flattered to see. Planetfall map I did inspire someone else in the Discord to do their own version of it. Got the warm fuzzies for this community. Yeah, it's a good community.
Yeah,
that's for sure.
Yeah, it's cool to see see people, you know, because a lot of it is you get like all sorts, because you get people who are like painting up something, they want to show it off. You get people who like are into like painting techniques. You get people who are like speculating on different ways of taking notes and stuff. You get a lot of like new people, I've noticed. Like, there was somebody who was asking, I think yesterday, of it was very much like a new person question, because they were asking about, like, do people play with, like, unpainted miniatures?
Oh, yes.
Which is one of those things that... Right, because that's a good question when you're brand new, you know. And some people will never play with unpainted minis. So some people will solo, but not in a group game.
Yeah, then it's kind of like disgusting, right?
Yeah, you have kind of an obligation to like, or if you're putting on a game for like somebody else who's new, you want it to like look good, right? So you bring your painted dudes. You don't bring the gray plastic space marines. But you know, you're just playing on your own. And some groups don't care. Like, you'll get like, if the dude has the arms glued onto the body, we're doing pretty good.
Yeah.
but yeah, it's cool too. It's one of those things that's like hard to, it's very difficult to imagine being new to a hobby that have been a, you know, like you're deeply invested in, because it's hard to even think of like what kind of questions does a new person have,
because
they're not necessarily thinking about like how do I handle a thing on in the rules, or how do I do a thing, or if I want to like make my campaign more difficult. That's not the questions they have. They have questions like, do I need to paint my minis? Like, how do I write down what happens?
Are you gonna beat me up if I don't use official minis?
Yeah. Well, yeah, that's the funny thing, because there are official minis now, right? Semi-official.
Psychic Hazard says, can't play with unpainted minis. It's like they're naked. But what if you're playing with painted, naked, was it Celts? Is that the most? Vitrix has like a set?
Maybe? Some of those dudes have their dicks out.
yeah, that's right. It's all naked.
So, which I think if I was fighting like Romans with pointy bits, I would be worried about that, but man, I don't know. Those guys are probably drunk, so sometimes when you get drunk, things just happen.
Noise says there's about 1,500 Weasel Maniacs now.
Yeah, it's a good chunk. And, you know, you get the usual where you get, like, there's probably, like, 1,000 people who just kind of lurk and look at posts and read, and then you get, like, you know, some who post occasionally, and then you get, like, you know, the 20 weirdos that, like, are having an argument about Breath of Scraps on that particular day.
Yeah.
So you get sort of, you know, I was actually thinking, because we had done a episode about, I think a long time ago, about like running an internet community. Maybe that's something we can revisit at some point. Because it's got different challenges. It comes with like size, like getting bigger. Maybe that's something for the homies to get back and F him on again.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Yeah, that'd be a good one. They're exploding right now because they just jumped into full spectrum dominance and it is dominating their community at the moment.
So
I've heard good things. It's good.
Yeah, well, that's the thing you get, because you kind of get like waves of, you know, people get caught up in the enthusiasm. part of gaming is to have other people be excited about something you're doing. Mm-hmm. That's why, like, when the Leagues book came out, like, everyone was posting their maps, because that was, like, the thing that you could share with everybody, and everybody, it was one of those moments where everyone has the exact same experience. Because, like, if you're painting, everyone has the experience of painting, like, Warhammer guys, but if you're doing Tyranids, and I'm doing a Space Marine character, and person C is doing, like, a bunker for their terrain, you're all making stuff for Warhammer, but it's not, like, the same thing. You don't necessarily have, like, but if you're all sitting and just making a map, like, everyone is doing, it would be like if, you know, when people online do, like, orc painting contest, everyone paints an orc or something.
Yeah, the Orktober, yeah.
Yeah. Stuff like that, where everyone, or, like, a while ago, there was one who was, like, a retro Space Marine. So everyone dug out, like, those second edition, like, plastic Marines with a bolt gun across the chest.
Yep.
And paint one of those, so... So yeah, there is something cool about having that, like, shared experience where everyone is, like, doing the same. There was a couple of questions. This is a little more unscripted.
Oh, yeah, sure.
But there was a couple of questions I'd gotten that I guess here is as good as any, where everyone will not hear it, and then I will have to answer them again 200 more times.
Well, let's make it into shorts, and then it'll just spread across the ether.
Oh, this is true. This is true. We have the power of virality.
Now. Yeah, yeah.
So one question was, is there more stuff coming for Forgotten Ruin, or is that, like, done, or what is the deal? And so I don't think from the Overlord side they were intending to make that a series. So I don't know that there will be an expansion. I'm not sure what it... I know, like, a dungeon crawling expansion for that would be pretty fun. Maybe that could happen as a PDF, but they have not really, I think, from their perspective. And I also don't know what their, because it's a license. So I don't know. It's possible the deal they made was literally just for one book. I don't really stick my nose too much into that because it just doesn't interest me. So they do intend to, like, keep selling it. And if it sells out and there is demand, they will reprint it. But I think it's mostly intended as, like, a, like, a one, you know, standalone thing. The same is the case for the Paranoia book, Five Clones and Alpha Complex, that is intended as, and I'm pretty sure that license was just for one book. Now, they will sell, obviously, because Modiphius also owns the board game, and the miniatures all came from the board game, so you can get the official minis, and they'll keep selling those, and I think they're available in STL as well, I'm not actually sure. But yes, so both of those are... Now, for that, it's maybe a little more likely. I could see that there could be scenarios, but this is just me, like, talking out loud. And with that game, a lot would also depend on what it turns out people play with it. If everyone is playing the standard procedurally generated mode, it's almost more like a board game, and I don't know that there's a lot to expand with that. If everyone is doing, like, the Game Mastered mode, then that's a whole different thing. So it just depends. But the idea for both of those was that they would be pretty, like, standalone. There is a specific, it's funny because people will call it, like, 5X now, right? Like, and it encompasses everything. But, like, I guess the core is still, like, Leagues and Parsecs. There is another thing coming, which will be a standalone game for one of those two. And I can't talk about it, but I am working on it, writing it. It'll be something that will be frustratingly close to what a bunch of people have asked for, but it will not be quite what you asked for, because that's not how we do things. It is.
So it's not quite MLP.
No, but it might be, you know, like, big horses, maybe. And they're not that friendly. They're more just, like, getting along out of obligation. You know, and they learn a valuable lesson about setting aside their differences in order to get a corporate promotion.
Oh, yeah.
So, you know, it's still a story you can learn from. It's just for a different audience.
Yeah.
but no, it is another core game. It will be compatible, and it will be... it is something that I suggested to them, and it wasn't a lot of persuasion. They were on board instantaneously.
Nice.
But, yeah, so it is 100% something that I, like, came up with and did. Planetfall is intended to be, right now it's obviously there's a standstill because waiting for the book to get good print and all that stuff. But it is intended to be, like, another game line alongside, like, Tanks and Parsecs itself. So there will definitely be at least one expansion, and then we'll see on how that goes. If Planetfall explodes in popularity when it's in print, I don't want to say that it's going to be like replacing regular Parsec as the main game, but obviously from their perspective, they would be most interested in whichever has like the most, you know, people buying.
Yeah.
You once ruled the realms with dice and a sword, painted goblins till tea, then your minis were stored. You grew up, got a job, bought a flat, wore a tie, swapped dragons for deadlines, your brushes went dry. Now the dishes are done and the kids are in bed. You climb to the attic to raise the undead. Crack open the paints that you swore you'd outgrown. The smell of acrylic, it feels like your home. There's grey in your beard, even more on your head, but you're splashing some colour on plastic and lead. So welcome back, General. What took you so long? Your hobby's still here. It's the place you belong. The Bedroom Battlefields Tabletop Miniature Hobby Podcast. Find it at bedroombattlefields.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
Tabletop Engineer is all in, that's for sure. He loves it.
Yeah. Yeah, I kind of had a feeling that that would be the case. I'm kind of curious what happens as he kind of, because there's some pain points in the campaign, so we'll see. Some people like that. You know, some people are less keen. So we'll see how that goes. But yeah, he was very, very fired up, which is cool. But yeah, that's kind of the, I guess, the questions, the not unspoken questions, because they were spoken, they were written. Mm-hmm. But sort of the main questions about like outstanding stuff. There's a general question I get of like exactly what I can do with 5X stuff, like on my lonesome, mm-hmm. outside of Modiphius branding. And the answer to that is mostly like Patreon stuff. Like that's sort of the, like they are the owners of the IP, if you will. But mm-hmm. There's some like specific carve outs. So they have the right, if they wanted to like have a dude write a different game, they totally can. But I do get some, preferential treatment, there's some agreements with that stuff. So, but also because I'm doing this commercially with Modiphius, I don't want to do it myself. Like, I don't have any interest in writing a regular, like 5X game that is outside of their publishing right now. I would rather do something different. And we have, you know, Mystic Space that needs to be promoted more and mm-hmm. finished and stuff. There's a lot. So,
yeah. So, bad news for the five clicks from the zone fans.
That one is actually outstanding. That one I can work with. However, okay. So the issue there is I do have some fan contribution I need to get uploaded, but I've just been so busy. However, there is also the Overlords are vaguely interested in a 5X post-apocalypse game.
It's goddamn teases.
Yeah, it's one of those.
Come
things,
it.
There's so many. So that one could happen, and in that case, I obviously wouldn't like. Like, let's say, this is not promising anything, but, you know, the Overlords do own a certain IP that is connected to post-apocalyptic gaming. So if that were to happen, then there's not really anyone who's going to be buying, like, five clicks on his own. So in that case, mm-hmm. I'm just, like, leave that for the fans, but, you know, it would be commitment to that. But if they don't do that, then... Now, I do have some ideas for something in the post-apocalyptic space, but maybe more of a Necromunda, Warbandy kind of thing with some solo options. I don't know. We'll see. But that's kind of some of the... Yeah. But that's sort of some of the main... There was another question I got a couple of times.
Noised probably is reflecting a question you get like constantly all the time, because I always see it. Spaceship from the saloon?
I mean, Cowboys in Space is a well-established genre with a mm-hmm. wide range of excellent miniatures in a multitude of scales. So I think that's basically mm-hmm. a given.
Pretty
know.
Much.
So also, since you phrase it like that, that is a five-core game using the ones and sixes on the dice. Because if it's five mm-hmm. five entities from somewhere, it's five-core. If it's five distance units, then it's parsecs-based. At some point,
now, I was thinking about Paranoia is like it's like the Five Men in Normandy naming scheme, right? Because it's five clones from the Alpha Complex, so it's not actually a 5X from Y.
No, that one screwed it up. that is because I didn't get to I didn't pick the title. I just said that it sounded good. I know that I had written them down because But yeah, I don't remember. There was a couple we went through, and I couldn't think of one, and I just left it to them because they had to. Because part of it was that any title had to be now. The dudes, and I think it's all Mongoose that owns it, were like super easy to work with. They didn't really have any like. They made suggestions, and it was kind of cool to get suggestions from like some of the guys who originally created Paranoia. That was really cool. but they didn't have any like demands of us. They kind of understood. Well, they didn't quite understand, I think, how a miniatures game worked, but they understood that this was a different kind of game than a role-playing game, and they kind of like just let us do our thing. But anything like the name and stuff like that did have to like get approved by them, and it had to be nailed down. So I think they picked a name that would just kind of get the point across to everybody who's not a super nerd, and then like go from there.
I think it's a good name.
It is a pretty good name. It just does break the naming convention, unfortunately.
Yeah.
but everyone has always been confused about it. It's like people for a while they don't do it anymore because now more people are no parsecs than 5-core, but for a long time people would say that 5 parsecs was a 5-core game, which it hasn't been since 1,000 years
first edition.
If you have the blue cover with the planet on it, then one, you're old school, and two, yes, that one is 5-core based. So you will still occasionally get like weirdos and Board Game Geek who will insist that that was the good one, and it's been ruined ever since.
So, maybe it was a good one. I've never seen it, so I don't even know.
No, I don't even know if I might have a PDF still. Yeah, that was like scrappy, scrappy strangeness. However, the choice to like dumb it down and sell out has been vindicated, at least commercially. So,
best decision. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, always go casual.
Go casual, and yeah, like I said, if you get 100 people who just want in on the cool thing, they buy 100 tickets. Then you can do something else. So it's like I forget what musician it was. He was saying that like half the albums you release should be ones you really burn for, and the other half can be for your fans. Like give them something that they want.
Oh yeah.
So if you listen to a band and half the songs are just like fucking garbage, like grocery store music, that's what happened.
Yep. Was that the music they really wanted to play, or were for the fans?
Yeah. Well, maybe their tastes are just dreadful, and their fans are like holding to it. But it's also like, especially when it's, you know, because when you're writing, like you have to trade on like something. Like you have a brand, right? I hate to fucking say that, but it's true. You know, and you do have to like fans expect like a certain kind of thing. Like I think by now there's enough like super hardcore people that if I say that I want to do something, there's got to be like 100 people who are interested, will check it out and try it. And there's going to be a much larger portion of people who that doesn't really like, they are here for like the parsecs or the leagues or something else. And some of those cross over and some don't.
And some people don't even know you wrote it. So
yeah, there's still a lot of people who are like surprised.
It's you?
Yeah. Like what is this stuff? This doesn't have glossy pictures. Why all the pages green?
Yeah.
So, but yeah. So, you know, I don't know where that was going, really, but like you do trade a little bit on, like you have to kind of, when you've earned like your keep a little bit, you can kind of get away with more, I think. Maybe that's not the case for, because you get like the Four Against Darkness guy. I don't know if he does anything else. Like he does a lot of that. So maybe that takes up like his entire time.
I think he used to, at least, right?
Yeah, I think he probably figured that was, like, paying the bills, so just do that. Like,
yeah.
You know, that's totally fine. But, like, you get some designers who, like, mostly do one thing. Like, I was looking at Firelock Games the other day, and I don't know if it's the same designer, but all their games are kind of the same. Like, and they're all cool. I like their stuff. But they just do one game, you know, or one idea. Like, 2-hour war games, all of their stuff is the same. You know, and I think in that case, like if that guy, I think he's mostly like winding it down now. But like if he had decided he wanted to do a completely different system, I think the fan base would probably have been like, I don't know. That's not why we're here. Whereas if you start out.
We just figured out this one. You can't throw a wrench at us.
Yeah. Like we finally know how reaction tests work, right? I can make fun of it because we played that game so much.
Yeah.
I've earned my time. He once
everyone should try it once.
Yeah.
No, just to see.
he sent me like a bunch of free PDFs once because I had done a like little AAR on RPGNet back in the day.
Oh, nice.
Oh, Robert's right.
Yeah, that's right.
I'm a fucking idiot. He did Song of Blades and Heroes. So, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, but that almost like reinforces my point in my defense because Song of X and X is also like, like there was a lot of that stuff.
There is, yeah.
Now, that was like super popular. So again, I don't blame him. Like, if you write something like that and you get like 10,000 people playing it, like fucking grind that out.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, so in his case, I would argue probably, and I might be wrong, maybe, but if he came out with something that was entirely different, there would obviously be interest because he's a known figure and he's got a track record. Mm-hmm. But I think it could also be tougher for him to like do something completely off the wall, where somebody like McCullough, who kind of does like a bunch of stuff.
Yeah.
I think he probably is more like to have people who will pick up something with his name on. Rather than because, oh, this is going to be exactly like X that he's done before. Like, you can kind of like get typecast a little bit.
Yeah. Though he is a little typecast because, you know, his Stargrave, Frostgrave, Range Shadow.
Yeah, there was.
Oh, he's the same engine. So.
Rangers. But then he did.
Yeah. The Silver Bayonets was a step out. But other than that, I don't think he's had too much.
Wasn't he also.
There's another game coming out now.
Like the Rang and Flank he did.
Oathmark. Yeah, he wrote Oathmark, which is way different. And it's really good.
Yeah, that was a really clever game. So I think he's kind of like struck that balance where he can like branch out a little bit and do stuff. And so, and again, you can like break out of it, but it's just like, I've always been like really self-conscious about it because I don't want to be like the solo guy or the 5X guy or originally it was like the 5-core guy because we did so much of that.
Yeah, the fad guy.
Yes, that's a really old school. You know, I wouldn't mind. Okay, well, this will be the where the thing like comes around to finish up because I actually went. I was like, you know what? So this is a bit of like noise lore. When I was still living in Portland, I got this email. So by then, Fast and Dirty was long dead. Mm-hmm. I think Yahoo groups had gone away, which like torpedoed the community.
Yep.
But I didn't know what to do with it anyway. It was this weird situation where the rules had always been free, and there was a bunch of people who had contributed over the years. But then a bunch of people had the last like proper PDF of that, had a bunch of art that people had drawn for it. And it was so cool because it was like an early community thing, straight off like Yahoo Groups, where people had drawn up art and like given to me just for free. And we did this book, and they got to see the stuff in the book. And maybe some of it was stuff they had already drawn. Sure, but you know, it was really cool, but it meant that I could never do anything with it because I couldn't like sell it. Like it was a pay what you want for like a little bit just to get a few bucks, but like you know, like those dudes had done the art for a free game, so you can't turn around and like sell it off kind of thing.
Turn around and sell it off.
Well, yeah, but you couldn't like sell that book without being a dick.
You sold exposure. And, yeah, there you go.
Yes. Yeah. And then like I hadn't thought about it for a while, and I was sitting, and I this took place in a Starbucks actually, because all of Clash and the Fringe was written at Starbucks. There was a Starbucks across the street, so I would go over there with my laptop. My big ass old laptop with a Dalek sticker on it. I would sit there and like feel very, very suburban. And this guy from, I think, the UK emailed me and asked if I was looking to sell the game. Well, it was so funny because like he knew that it wasn't worth much. And I knew it wasn't worth much. And in the end, the only amount we could agree on that was like enough that it wasn't nothing, but was still like reflecting what it was worth was like I think $300 or something.
Okay. Yeah.
Which I would never today. I would just know like better just hang on. But at the time, I didn't anticipate ever doing anything with it. So you know, I think I blew it all. Order from like Peter Pig or something.
Oh yeah, nice.
So they did their own version of it and kind of dusted off, and then that went nowhere, which I had figured would happen. I think they were hoping to like support it with advertisement on the website or something. I don't know. That was not going to happen. And I got the thought the other day of like, you know, I bet if like I contacted that guy and like asked him, hey, do you want to like swap it back? And, you know, we could do like a little crowdfund and stuff. Cause there's still 12 people who would throw in like $10 for that. But then it turns out that I think those dudes just don't exist anymore. Like, the contact form on the website doesn't work. And
oh, dang.
Yeah. I don't have the guy's email. Like, the emails on there don't work anymore. So, like, it's just legitimately, like, dead now.
That's fair game, then.
Yeah, well, technically, I was like, you know what? I could, like, retro clone my own game. Like, I'd experimented with it a little bit, but at the time, I was going to be like, well, you know, you could do like a spiritual successor, but then it was like, who the fuck needs Nordic Weasel sci-fi like skirmish games? Nobody needs that. So yeah, maybe a fast, then you have to call it something up. So part of the reason it was called Fast and Dirty was because it would abbreviate to FAD, and at the time, mm-hmm. it was always a thing that like a new game would come out and then like everyone would get into it and then nobody would play it in like a year. Like War came out and Warzone had died and Urban War and like all these games kept coming out and going away, like Starship Troopers and stuff. So that was the joke, that this game was also going to be a fad.
Yeah.
I still get like one email a year basically, somebody saying like, oh yeah, this game was great.
I was like, yeah,
thanks, hey, man. Yeah. Like you know, there were stuff happened after that, right? Like you'll be surprised.
Yeah, I never needed to move past it. Fad was enough. There we go.
Yeah. There was always like, it was one of those things where like every time I look at it, because I'm very proud of like that game and what it was. But there's always those things that I look at and it's like, man, I wish I hadn't done like that one bit. Like I remember like squad support weapons always like was weird because like the ranges were always. Like, there was never a good answer to, like, what if the squad has, like, a flamethrower, but their rifles have long range? Like, how does that work? Mm-hmm. So, and it's like, but yeah, there was a lot of, like, cool things in there. It was such a weird, like, it was funny that, like, I remember being, like, no experience. I never even thought that you could write for money, basically. I was going to be a school teacher. But I had moved to the United States, and we're going to get the deep lore here. But I just moved to the United States, and it takes a long time. It takes a long time before you can even apply to like get your work permit, at least if you arrive on a marriage visa, which is what I did. Mm-hmm. So I had like, I think a year where I couldn't work. So the only thing I could do other than fuck around on the internet and chopping wood outside was like, okay, like I'd always like wanted to make my own little game. So that's how it came about. Because I played Stargwent and I decided like I could do that, but better, which is hubris. But that was the start of Fast and Dirty. It was just like, there's like, the original version is like completely lost to the internet. Because I think there was only like 20 people who ever had a copy. And it had like some random dude who had like offered I could use this like pencil drawings. He even drew some little drawings, pencil drawings of like space bugs and space soldiers. Like, and scanned them and sent them to me like for nice. The game. Like, so it technically had exclusive artwork. But yeah, most of that is completely lost. The only thing I've ever been able to find was the ambitious name Second Edition, which didn't have the art, but had like two more pages. So it was like 12 pages instead of 10.
Tell you what we got to do. We got to do an episode on FAD. We'll put a call out there because someone has it still.
Yeah.
Out there, someone still has it. And if they ever look up on YouTube, maybe whatever happened to Fast and Dirty, maybe the video will come up and be like, oh, I got First Edition. I'll send it to Ivan.
Yeah, that could happen. Stranger things have. I have occasionally been able to track down weird stuff like that. So, yeah, maybe that'll be our next episode. It'll be the Fast and Dirty episode.
Nice. Yeah. So,
that also sounds
fast we're or get dirty, as Ludanto says.
We're going to get like at least like three people who think it's about porn and we'll click on and they'll be sorely.
Well, we'll take off our shirts just to, you know,
spice things up.
Yeah.
See, Lance already doesn't have clothes on.
And Robert Dean was said that The Warriors of Athena is the new one coming out. And I'm pretty sure that's based on, he already did Warriors of Athena kind of style game a while back in one of his magazines. So I think it's like a fleshed out version. Still like Rangers of Shadowdeep engine. But there was one other one I forgot about. And it's a shame because actually it's one of my favorite games that he's done, which is the Operation Last Train, which he moved into Death Ship 1.
Oh, okay. Never played that one.
It has a very clever combat resolution system, I feel. Like, it feels good when you play it.
Yeah. So, yeah, he's got he's definitely, like, an ambitious guy. And he has got a good eye for, like, reimagining, like, the same engine in a different, like, packaging and making it feel interesting. Because, like, Frostgrave and I know, like, Rangers and Frostgrave have, like, a lot in common, but they still, like, feel, you know, they feel very, like their identity feels very separate. It doesn't
feel... I feel like he's the Mark Twain of wargaming.
That could be. Somebody should send that to him. He might not even disagree with that. I don't know if he smokes a pipe. But, yeah, like, that's... Yeah, absolutely.
Jason might have it. Oh, Jason might have it.
Oh, okay.
So he remembers the cover.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. You never know. Stranger things have happened. Yeah. But yeah, well, I guess that's like the deep lore. Then I can also talk about like the game that is 100% lost that was only played with like three of my friends. And I think I sent a copy to like two guys on the old Portent website, which was a now long gone forum for people to argue about one.
Nice.
This may seem difficult to believe, but back in the day, Warhammer fans were a contentious, argumentative lot.
Weird. So weird.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, that's, it feels like if that had been the case, that would still be the case. But, you know, now it's very harmonious and everyone gets along great.
It's amazing.
Yeah. Such great community.
Well, you want to wrap up with what we got going on?
Yeah.
What we're planning on next?
Yeah. Well, unfortunately, I do have things to say. I think we had talked about last time. I'm going to do some more like indie stuff. And I managed to track down a rule system that I remembered from like being in high school and on the internet. And I'd searched everywhere. And finally, I found it. Unfortunately, it turned out it was actually not. So I'm not going to play it. But I was happy that I found it and could read it again. So I'm still on the hunt for something for my indie gaming project, which will be some bullshit off the internet and whatever I have lying around. I was kind of eyeing because I do have some random 172 plastics. I may press them into service for literally anything. But I watched this, I guess it's called Eastern. It's like a communist Western movie. But they're set in like the East, like the semi like Asian regions of the Soviet Union, usually in the 20s. So you have like bandits and stuff. So it's like a Western, but you know, like the main character is like a stalwart communist, and there's like and all the bandits are like East Asian kind of. It was called, I think, The White Son of the Desert. It's on YouTube. You can just search for it. It's actually really fun. It's a very fun movie. Very Russian, with a guy who just like wanders around and gets in trouble and solves problems with like weird characters. Like there's a Red Army recruit whose rifle never shoots because it keeps being jammed, and there's like a random like all the characters are just like funny and weird in a very absurd way. But it got me thinking, like, you know, communist Western kind of game, you would only need like a handful of models. You need some bandits, I guess, which I don't have.
Be interesting.
Just do kind of I guess it's kind of like there's the Back of Beyond kind of thing, which I think is more like China in the 20s, but it's the same kind of thing where like you get different like bandits and adventurers and political operatives and treasure hunts and stuff. So yeah, something interesting. Maybe I'll just like be super indie and just muck together some bullshit rules.
Oh yeah.
You know, but there's some, I kind of want to stick to like it'll be something I download, like somebody's free game. So maybe I'll just find generic like gunfight rules somebody's put together and just start from there. Like the whole purpose is to like be a little like back to basics, like how we played games when we were like 14 and couldn't afford shit.
Yeah.
So, you know.
Yeah, exactly.
So that's the vibe. But yeah, so maybe it'll be something like that. Because I think I do have a couple of like plastic like Wilhelm Russians lying around.
Nice.
So yeah, that's awesome. Gotta have like the
the jacket thing.
Yeah, it's like the bedroll. Their blanket that's like rolled up, you carry your stuff in it, but they're so like iconic and they always look fun when you paint them.
Yeah, I ordered some British World War One troops from Irregular, and one of them, ended up being a Russian. But I looked at him like, why does he got a tire around him?
Yeah,
he's a 15 millimeter guy. It's like, what is going on? So I had to figure it out, and I was looking at different World War One troops. I'm like, that's what it is. Okay, Russian.
Yeah. How good or bad are those Irregular 15s?
The 15s heard, like, are good.
Very mixed things.
No, the 15s are solid. All
the ones. Oh, okay.
I don't have all the
15s,
but
yeah.
Metal miniatures.
I've heard a lot of people say that they paint up well, which.
Yeah.
You know.
The 6mm infantry from there are junk. You'd might as well just throw them out, honestly.
Yeah, I've seen some of those. I bought some of their, like, now 2mm you can't really complain about because, you know, what you're getting. But they have like, because like the little infantry blocks they do, and it's funny because they'll sell literally the same one as like you can use them for like Greek spearmen or like Napoleon, like French. It doesn't matter. But they had some with like that was supposed to be skirmishers, and they are literally just like a little like speck of lead on a base. It's like I'm not paying for that shit again. But the little like houses and villages were really cool. So you could do like, so yeah. But yeah, that kind of cured me of my 2mm gaming, I'll admit.
It's a thing, that's for sure. 2mm. It's a thing.
It's a little thing.
Yeah.
Even for like tank skirmish, just get Pyco armor in 3mm. They are so much better.
Yeah. 2mm tanks. So tiny.
But you have a giant box of stuff going on.
Yeah. I am going to, well, first I'm going to start with Scouring Sands. I'm going to paint that up. What I have. I think I have it right here. No. Scouring Sands comes with like chits to represent like foot troops and gun emplacements and stuff. So I'm just going to replace all those things with actual miniatures.
Mm-hmm.
And then that's going to be my first round of painting live streams that I'm going to reintroduce back to the channel.
Yeah.
So it's been a hot random times. I don't have any set times because, you know, depends on soccer practices and stuff for my kid or energy even. But yeah, so I'll just do it randomly in the evening, you know, North American time. And then I'm going to start a huge project, which is the Hotspots Hinterlands, like the bestiary, really, the opposing forces tables, which is a whopping 325 miniatures. In four factions. And that's just the opposition. That's not your forces.
Right. So you're going to, this is like the maximalist approach to doing this.
Yeah. So I'm just going to start live streaming in those things.
So
I might record it locally too. And like kind of make like a compilation video at the end, just to have like a vlog project. That's hard to say.
Then you could do like, here's like all the, of this type minis and you can cut them together and here's all the.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, you can do some themes.
Yeah. So that should be fun. A little more activity on the channel. And if anyone has noticed, I put this one back on the Bad Internet Friends podcast channel instead of my other channel because I realized that was pointless. I might as well just keep it all on this
channel. Oh, yeah, that makes sense. It's kind of like people used to do in White Dwarf, those like Tale of Four Gamers or whatever, where they would have like four different guys talking about building their armies, except this is the tale of one gamer doing four different armies. So it's just like the.
Yeah. I love projects like that, though. I just want to build games, honestly.
Yeah, that's fair. I mean, I think we talked about it before. Like, some people use Armulus just as, like, a guide to what to paint next.
Yeah, exactly. Like, if I'm on my own, I'm just kind of stuck. I'm like, I don't know what I want to paint. So then I just start, like, researching things. I'm like, okay, here's what I need to do.
Yeah. But now you have, like, a whole plan laid out. So plus, people can follow it as it happens. So that'll be exciting.
Yeah. Tune in and enjoy. Robert Dean says, I have to admit, having a soft spot for irregular 6mm troops, having used them for a couple of projects back in the 90s. Irregular recently dropped the little stuff, though. They sold the range to someone.
Yeah, well, it's also like you have to view it in context of time, because like, if in the 90s, there was not a lot of good 6mm like at all. Like Backers and stuff like that came along and kind of like raised the scale, unless you were like stateside and buying like GHQ tanks and stuff. But like, I remember like, I don't know, like 98, 99 and looking into 6mm when I was like looking into everything and they were all just garbage. Like a lot of them really bad. I'm confident. I'm not saying like I wouldn't have been happy with them. I'm sure I would have because, you know, even like 15mm at that point could be a little dodgy. So you just make do. But yeah, like a lot of those ranges are just really old. I remember looking, they had this one set of like space soldiers, space rangers or something that it regularly used to sell. And I used to like look at them, and the more I looked at them on the website, the more they like grew on me. But I've never bought any. And now, you know, with tariffs and shit, it's like more expensive to get them anyway. So but
I mean, if I had to choose between GHQ and irregular, I'd probably go irregular, honestly, for you. 6mm infantry. Because the GHQ look better, but they're so they're worse than irregular for, you know, breaking off.
Oh yeah, they're
and super spindly. Super spindly. Yeah.
Yeah. I've had ones that I bought where like some of them were miscast because they were so thin. So yeah, exactly. Plus like the cost is not necessarily like
atrocious.
Yeah. So, although for historicals, those I was like Bacchus, which is like a good middle ground. Like they look nice and you get a little, yeah, there's just better options now. But yeah, I can definitely understand the, you know, having a soft spot for minis that you used back in the day, especially since for a lot of stuff, like if anyone makes it, it was probably regular. Like they kind of like covered prolific. Everything. Yeah. Yep. You know, I remember they had, people would always recommend because they had this range called Really Useful Guns, and it was just like artillery pieces that were like used everywhere, so you could just buy them. So you know, and I will give like a shout out because it always looks like it's been this like little family business basically, so you gotta like give some respect to like something that was actually run by like real fans of the hobby and real like people who invested in it and helped make it happen. So I don't want
to. I really like their old school navigatable website. I mean, there's not much going on there. You just click links and then you get to go to the place.
Oh, yeah. Like,
you know, I actually like that. It's all very clear to me.
Yeah. I mean, it'll run on anything. I do remember being amazed when I ordered something that you could just like use PayPal, I think. Because I remember originally they had the instructions that some people used to do, where it's like email your credit card number, but send it in two different emails.
Yeah.
Like, I was like, I'm not doing that, man. I'm absolutely not backing on like some of the champions of the hobby and the industry. I'm just saying the 6mm was not real good.
I do love Ground Zero Games sci-fi 6mm though.
Yeah, I don't know if he ever got around to like redoing those, or I know they were redoing maybe the 15 lines to sell better, because I know he redid a lot of those. I don't know if he's ever redone the dirt side range.
I don't know. They're still good to me though. I mean, they're perfect for what you need for 6mm. Not too big, but they're sturdy, and typically they're well enough cast.
Yeah, his infantry were good. I was never a huge fan of the vehicles. They looked a little like soft, I guess. Maybe it's just like a lot of them were that like hover look that I just didn't think was very good. But yeah, his infantry is really cool. Yeah, they all look really old. I guess he just isn't. Maybe they don't really sell much anymore. Certainly can't. Because the Stargrunt range keeps like, I don't know if he's still working on them, but a lot of those have been real. Oh, he has starter deals now. This is dangerous. I shouldn't look at that.
Yeah, yeah. The only shop at Christmas time, because that's when they give you free extra stuff. So.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And
that's the bang for your buck.
Oh god, yeah. I remember like ordering from Ground Zero Games and getting myself faster than a order I did the same day to a US company.
Yep.
So somehow
the wizards.
Yeah. Yeah, people used to joke about the GCG like wormhole.
Yep.
But yeah. Well, that was a meandering fucking stuff. But that's what's going on.
Yeah.
That's what's happening.
That's what we got. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Fun times. So,
tune in next time, and it'll be equally meandering, and I guess we'll talk about, like, the deepest lore of Fast and Dirty and that one fucking game. So.
Sweet. All right, folks. We will see you next time.
Yeah. Peace. Whoop. Thank you for hanging out in chat, and go paint some minis. Have a good time.
Yes, take care. Bye-bye.
This episode of Bad Internet Friends was streamed live on YouTube and Twitch. There is a North American-friendly live stream every second Wednesday of the month, and a European-friendly live stream every fourth Monday of the month.